Should abortion be allowed in the case of rape? My guest today says absolutely not, and she should know. She was the product of a rape.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, it's one thing to be pro-life. It's one thing to say, hey, you shouldn't just abort a baby because you don't want to have another kid. Or you know, hey, my boyfriend and I, we weren't really serious, didn't know I'd get pregnant. And, hey, I don't want to bring an unwanted kid into this world. It's one thing to say, no, we're pro-life, we're against that. But what about the case where a mother, a woman, is raped? She's assaulted? It's the ultimate violation of personhood. Then, after all that, she finds out she's pregnant. And now we want to pass laws saying that she cannot abort her baby. Even some pro-life people that say, well, we'll make exceptions in the case of rape and incest. I think your thinking, if that's the way you think, is going to get challenged today. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. It's Wednesday as we focus on the world, on moral and cultural issues. Number to call to dialogue with my guest, whom I'll introduce in a moment, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. And neither she nor I will mind in the least if you take exception to what we're saying or want to challenge what we're saying. My guest is Rebecca Kiesling. She's an international pro-life speaker and attorney, adoptee, wife, and mother of five. Her own story, conceived in rape. She was targeted for abortion. She would have been another statistic, from worthless to priceless. Rebecca, thanks so much for joining us on the air today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's just start here in terms of your own story and just take a couple of minutes to introduce things. At what point did you find out your origins in terms of being conceived in rape and not being raised by the man that fathered you?
I learned when I was 18 that I was conceived in rape when I got some information from the court. It was called non-identifying information, and it sounded really sketchy. All kinds of details about her, but for him, it said he was Caucasian and of large build, which sounds like a police description. And I just asked my caseworker, was my mom raped? And that's when she told me. Then when I met my birth mother, several months later, she was thrilled to meet me, but filled me in on all of the horrible details. I mean, it was a surreal rapist. She was abducted at knife point off the street.
And how did this affect you as a young woman?
It was devastating. I had no foundation for dealing with the truth. My parents were secular Jews. They basically had always told me that your birth mother loved you so much, you know, that she decided to place you for adoption, and you know, not knowing any of my story. And so when they, when I told them about the description, they said, oh, there must be some mistake. I'm sure it wasn't a rape. You know, they really didn't know how to deal with it. And then when the caseworker told me, they actually said, well, you know, a lot of women used to lie about being raped, which is not true.
Right.
Michigan was a no-exception state. There was no reason to lie, you know, to try to get an abortion or something. And in fact, most rape victims don't want to even acknowledge that they've been raped. It's quite the opposite.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was devastated.
Yeah, fully understood, and I couldn't expect anything less than that. But to go from a devastated 18-year-old raised in a secular Jewish home to a pro-life champion to saying that no child should get the death sentence because of the crimes of the rapist, well, this puts you against the grain. So let's talk this through. We've got some audio clips I want to play as well. Rebecca talking to Sean Hannity. Some other clips she can respond to from CNN discussion. We'll hear from you, 866-34-TRUTH.
fire we
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
An abortion doesn't unrape a woman. An abortion just adds more violence on top of that first violence that she endured. And you look at the stories of someone like Rebecca Kiesling, a woman who was conceived in rape, and she says, should I have received the death penalty for the crimes of my father?
That was the voice of Lila Rose, another pro-life champion, asking the same question, that if you have an abortion, does that unrape the woman who's been raped? My guest, Rebecca Kiesling, is an attorney and a pro-life activist, herself conceived in rape, targeted for abortion, and then raised in an adoptive home. Rebecca, before we talk about what you're doing today, the impact you've been able to have on some major political leaders and key issues you've addressed. Talk me through first how it is that you were not aborted, and then how you actually have decided to take the flak and go against the grain of so much in the society and become now a pro-life attorney and activist. So how is it first that you're here at all?
Because I was protected. In Michigan, abortion has always been illegal, was always illegal, even in cases of rape. Michigan is actually the only state that has never had a rape exception on its books in any law. Because we have pro-life leaders here who refuse to compromise. And my birth mother actually went to two back alley abortionists. I was almost aborted. She backed out because it was illegal. Out of fear for her safety, the back alley conditions. And when we met, even though she was thrilled to meet me, she told me that if abortion had been legal, she would have aborted me. And she maintained that position for 6 years.
Really?
Until she actually, my niece was in an unplanned pregnancy with her first great-grandchild. And that's when she changed her mind about it. But, you know, absolutely, I would have been aborted if it had been legal, and I owe my life to the law being there to protect me.
All right, so you first go through the devastation of realizing your origins, your adoptive parents, the whole history with your mother, a rapist for a biological father. You process all of that. Difficult for me, just being raised in, you know, by my mom and dad, to be able to relate to how that would feel. Now your mother, looking you in the eye, or maybe not looking you in the eye, but there in your presence, tells you that she would have aborted you if it was legal. Was that like another kick in the stomach? How did that affect you?
Yeah, I was away at college, so that was a phone conversation after we had a wonderful reunion weekend. But she sent me this beautiful letter that it was not reason enough of having to give up something as beautiful as you were. You know, saying that she had hoped and I'd forgotten the circumstances already and all these beautiful words. But then a few weeks later, for me, you know, I asked her about abortion because I wanted to know. Because it's the first thing I thought of when I learned how I was conceived is how people say that they're for abortion in cases of rape. I instantly felt targeted, so I had to know. And it was... It was very difficult to hear her say that her body, her choice is more important than my whole life. Today she's thankful. We're both thankful that we were both spared that horror. I'm a blessing to her. I honor her. My adoptive family was actually very abusive. Things got really chaotic a few years ago. And so my birth mother and her husband legally adopted me.
Really?
And I am a blessing to her. She has 5 grandchildren through me who honor her. And anything ever happens to her, I'm going to be the one who takes care of her.
Yeah, how extraordinary. And that's, again, a process that she had to go through to get to the point of saying that she's glad she didn't abort you. You know, when we're talking to a mother, five, when we're talking to someone active in society for the cause of good, and you realize you could have been just another statistic, you know, that's what personalizes things for us. I've read much about the Holocaust and explained certain things to Christian audiences about it. But what's far more devastating than talking about 6 million Jews is you tell the story of one family, of one child. So everyone that's listening right now, if you're contemplating an abortion, that's a Rebecca Kiesling in the womb, or a Michael Brown in the womb, or whoever else it could be, a family member or friend. And these lives are going to be shaped not by what happens in the womb, by what happens outside the womb. That's how this life is going to be shaped and your destiny can be set. So, Rebecca, if you were raised in a secular Jewish home, I'm a Jewish follower of Jesus, and sad to say the great majority of American Jews are quite liberal when it comes to abortion, and some of the major pro-abortion forces in America are Jewish. How do you get from being raised in that environment to becoming a pro-life activist?
Yeah. And isn't it so ironic that they toast L'chaim? I mean,
right.
You know, they toast to life all the time. I went to 5 years of Hebrew school. I was bat mitzvah, though God was irrelevant in our household. And, you know, I had issues being adopted, too, of being told by my classmates in Hebrew school that I'm not really one of them. I felt rejected by Jews, and so when I first came to know Christ, you know, it was like me, in a way, also turning my back on Judaism, because I was so hurt growing up. And then when I later read Scripture, how we're told that we're grafted in to the family tree in the spirit of adoption through Christ, it was like, wow, now instead of having that hurt, now I embrace it. And do a messianic seder, and, you know, and
amazing.
Now I know, you know, how I fit in, you know, where I fit into this world.
All right, so you have a life-changing encounter with Jesus, and then out of that, at what point do you start to feel the burden, I've got to do something? Because you become a target. I mean, you went through enough already. You had enough to overcome just to have a normal, well-adjusted life with everything you've passed through. But now you make yourself a target for controversy. You can't just live a normal, quiet life when you take the stands you take. How did you come to this place where you are today?
Well, I've always been a person who's driven. My dad told me from the time I was 10 that I should be an attorney, you know, because I like to plead the case, you know, and use reason, and I always had a lot of passion. When I learned how I was conceived, I immediately wanted to cry out. But really, I didn't know my own value, identity, and purpose, and I was coming from a place of hurt. And it really wasn't until I became part of the vine that I began to bear fruit, and doors began to open for me to share.
And have you been assaulted with angry words as if you... Because... you can relate in a secondhand way to the shame that a woman would feel who's been raped. You know, you're as close as you can come to that, not having been through that. But, you know, the whole argument that now your law is going to impose more shame. Now I've got to carry that baby full term. I've got to live with that. I've got to live with the reality of that rape and then make a decision about what to do with that baby. How can you impose your morals on me? We'll get to the arguments about this and play some audio clips you can interact with. But what kind of anger or hatred has come your way from people who sincerely feel like this?
Well, there's a Feminists for Life poster of me that says, "Did I deserve the death penalty?" And it explains my story underneath. It's used on college campuses a lot, especially when I go speak. And people have showed me what's written underneath, "Did I deserve the death penalty?" You know, they write, "Yes." And I've had people... tell me to my face during Q&A at university campuses that, you know, I have no problem looking in the eyes and saying to you that I think that your mother should have been able to abort you, and I fully understand that that would mean that you'd be dead right now. Yeah, I have no problem doing that. Wow, and, you know, it's out of their care for women that you realize they would say such a thing to a woman like me. I'm not feeling the love.
Right. Right. So that's the question then that I want to try to probe. And just want to play a very quick clip, and we'll get to react to these on the other side of the break. But Joey, clip number two, this is Lila Rose speaking on CNN.
An abortion doesn't unrape a woman. An abortion just adds more violence on top of that first violence that she endured. And you look at the stories of someone like Rebecca Kiesling, a woman who was conceived in rape, and she says, should I have received the death penalty for the crimes of my father?
All right. Obviously, a powerful argument. The counter argument is, are you going to now impose your morality on everyone else? The woman's been raped already. Now you're going to make her a victim of your laws. But I want to explore with Rebecca is why the intensity of the anger? Why would someone look at her, a mother of five, and say it would have been better for your mother to have aborted you? Go to Rebecca's website. It's Rebecca, that's with two C's and an A, Rebecca Kiesling, KIESSLING.com, RebeccaKiesling.com.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest, pro-life activist, attorney, herself conceived in rape, raised by adoptive parents, Rebecca Kiesling. Her website, Rebecca Kiesling, that's C-C-A, Rebecca, and then K-I-E-S-S-L-I-N-G.com. Here's interaction on Crossfire. A response to Lila Rose. Let's play clip number four.
Let's talk about extremism for a second. Lila, I read or heard that you said that women who are raped should be forced to carry their pregnancies to term. Are you really telling women that they should be forced by the government to carry their rapists' babies?
All right, Rebecca, you can answer this question directly. What are you advocating for? What are you?
Well, first of all, I am not the rapist baby. Okay, I'm my mother's child. The majority of rape victims not only choose life, but they choose to raise their child. Today, nationwide, over 50% in your average unplanned pregnancy abort. People think rape victims must be like 95%. No, It's half. It's 15 to 25%. Two different studies. 15 to 25% abort. Over 50% raise that child, 25% choose adoption. And now after everything that she's been through, you're actually going to suggest that her child is the rapist baby? How dare them stigmatize a child like that? You know, we stopped doing that in our society. Children used to be called things like illegitimate child or bastard under the law. That was the term of art for them. And we stopped doing that, but we still demonize the child conceived in rape more than any other segment of society. I really believe we are the most demonized, marginalized, stigmatized, and discriminated against segment of today's society, the ones that today Jesus would call the least of these.
Now, Rebecca, as you understand and as you share it on your website, as I introduce you a certain way, it is for everyone to get a perspective. But you jar us back into reality by reminding us.
Oh, I hate that term product. You called me a product of rape. You know, a product, it makes it sound like you're a byproduct. You know.
Yeah, and again, I'm using the terminology of the world. I'm using the terminology the way that these things are portrayed, and obviously on your side with this, playing the devil's advocate here. Let's just review these stats for one second. All right. In terms of abortions that are specifically related to rape or incest, so of all abortions performed in America, what percentage can legitimately be tied to rape or incest?
1%, but we are also 1% of the population.
Okay. All right. So 1%, which is also represents 1% of the population, so proportionate in that sense. But when it's constantly raised as a major objection, we're saying in 99% of the cases, doesn't even matter. Okay. And then
right,
of women,
they say the 99 for the one.
Right.
You know, that the pro-life people compromise. Pro-life organizations compromise. 99 for the one, which always makes you think of the parable of the lost sheep.
Right. And then you're saying out of women who are raped, what percentage actually abort their babies?
Between 15 to 25% abort. CDC says there's 32,100 some rape-related pregnancies in the U.S. every year. So given a birth rate of between 75 to 85%, that's about 25 to 27,000 children born in the U.S. every year as a result of rape.
All right. So I just want people to hear that. One of my closest friends I've ministered with for years, his wife was conceived in rape as well. And she's a godly woman. The two of them do an extraordinary work in ministry together. And it's just important that people hear these things. And they're deeper arguments to get into. But I want to play some interaction that you had with Sean Hannity. I don't hear him a lot. Obviously, I'd agree with certain things he says and not with everything. But this one is it's pretty strange. Let's listen to this interaction. Joey, I'll play it. Go ahead.
I'm not in that interview. I think it's Lila Rose talking.
Okay, got it. My producer, Matt, was trying to explain that to me. My bad for missing that. I see what I'm looking at here. Got it. All right. Joey, I'm just going to play this from my end here. Listen to this interaction.
Well, I do make exceptions for rape and incest. I would assume that you are more consistent philosophically than I am, and you do not.
Well, here's a question for you, Sean. I've heard that before from other folks. Yeah. Is the child that whose father may be a rapist, and that child may have been conceived in rape, is it that child's fault that their father was a rapist, and should they be given the death penalty of an abortion because their father was a rapist or
some sort
of criminal?
You are more intellectually consistent than I am, and I concede the point because I can see that side and see that argument. But there's something to me that if a woman is violated that way by an evil person. Because anybody that could do that to a woman is evil. I just have a hard time in that case saying that she has to carry that child.
Here's a question for you, Sean.
It's almost like an evil seed. You know what I'm saying?
All right, Rebecca, was he then calling you an evil seed?
Yes. Yeah, there's no way around that one. And I met him exactly 8 months earlier in Tampa at the Citizens United event at the RNC, the Republican National Convention. I'm in the Citizens United film, The Gift of Life, with Governor Mike Huckabee, and I shared my story with Hannity. And he said, well, you know, I'm a rape exception guy, right? And then he said, you're going to try to change my mind. Oh, you're going to change my mind. He's like, oh, gosh. And then he's like, oh, you're tearing me apart. You're tearing my heart apart. Oh, my goodness. And then I told him about how, you know, God had used my story to change the heart of Governor Rick Perry and Newt Gingrich during the presidential campaigns at the Citizens United premiere of the film I'm in. And he said, I heard about you. And he's like, oh, boy. And then I start challenging him, you know, with the reality that I was protected. That's why I'm alive. And, you know, what it means to really say that to me and, you know, how it makes me feel. And he said, oh, my gosh. He's like, oh, you're tearing me apart. And then he says, okay, that's it. I'm going to have you on. I'm going to have you on. And then he gets the producer over. He's like, here, take down her information. He's like, we're going to have her on. And he tells everybody who's standing around listening to our conversation, I'm going to have her on. I'm going to have this young woman on. She's going to share her story. And I'm thinking, there's no way he'll have me on before the election is over because Romney was such a rape exception guy. But I never anticipated that he would say something inflammatory.
Yeah. People have these talking points ingrained in their heads, these statements that they've made, and often they can be challenged and go right back to them. There's an extreme justification he gives for this. We'll talk about it on the other side of the break. I want Rebecca to tell the story of how she was able to impact Governor Perry. Friend, every life can make a difference if you'll stand up for what's right. Today, for your gift of any size to help us in our work, I want to send you two DVDs, my debate with gay activist Harry Knox and my debate with Rabbi Shmuel Boteach on homosexuality. Retail value with postage about $40. Yours for your gift of any size today, but stand with us, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. I have not even tried to take a call the first half hour, but if you differ with my guest, or if you have an honest, heartfelt question about abortion for my guest, Rebecca Kiesling, 866-34-TRUTH. Her website, Rebecca, that's two C's, R-E-B-E-C-C-A, that spelling, the more common spelling, Kiesling, K-I-E-S-S-L-I-N-G .com. Rebecca, I know that last quote from Sean Hannity got you especially passionate in what you're saying. I want to play one more, which is, again, I don't hear him a lot. I normally read transcripts of things and don't get to watch a lot of TV news or commentary. But I imagine what he says here has to be one of the most lame things I've ever heard. And he says it in a way that's pretty lame. He's explaining why somehow in his mind a child conceived in rape is an evil seed because of the horrible acts of the father, the rapist, biological father. And this is what he further says.
No matter how horrific the crimes of the father or any of the parents
doesn't
are.
Doesn't it say in the Bible the sins of the father are passed on to the second and third generation or something like that?
Yeah. Okay, so Lila Rose is making her case, and then he very lamely says, yeah, doesn't the Bible say somewhere the sins of the father is passed down to the future generations? As a Christian and as a pro-life activist, how do you respond to that argument?
Okay, Deuteronomy 24:16, parents are not to be put to death for their children, nor children put to death for their parents. Each will die for their own sin. And Ezekiel 18, mm-hmm. 14, but suppose the son who sees all the sins of his father commit, and though he sees them, he does not do such things. He keeps my laws, follows my decrees. He will not die for his father's sin. He will surely live. But his father will die for his own sin. Yet you ask, why does the son not share the guilt of his father? I mean, that's really what Sean Hannity was asking, right?
It
says, since the son has done what is just and right, has been careful to keep all the decrees, he will surely live. The one who sins is the one who will die. The child will not share the guilt of the parent, nor will the parent share the guilt of the child. The righteousness of the righteous will be credited to them, and the wickedness of the wicked will be charged against them. It pays to have sound theology.
Yeah, and then, you know, the sins of the fathers being visited, it's talking about from generation to generation. If there's no repentance, then things get worse and worse and worse. They continue to degenerate, and then as the sins degenerate, there's further judgment. You know, if you have children of alcoholic parents and that child is not able to make a break from the past, there's much more likelihood of the child becoming alcoholic, and then on and on it goes. And then if you continue to perpetuate this, if you just look at a drug violent culture, someone raised in that environment where there's drugs and violence, that's what they learn, that's what they grow up with. This is sins being visited. In other words, the behaviors and the actions get worse and worse from generation to generation, and then the judgment goes from increases as sin increases. But that's one of the clear things God was trying to tell Israel. You will not be judged for what your parents did. We may suffer the consequences of wrong choices our parents made. You know, maybe we raised in poverty where we could have been raised, you know, and with sustenance because of bad decisions our parents made. But God's very clear. He's not going to penalize the kid because the father sinned. And that's exactly what Sean Hannity is advocating. Okay, we've got an extended segment. Mm-hmm. We come back. Rebecca, two questions I want to ask. Why do people make the argument for rape exceptions? What about, where do you stand if there is clear fetal abnormality? The child is going to suffer terribly and only live for a few months. Where do you stand on that? And why is it that people who are consistently pro-life can be so inconsistent in some of these other areas? We'll be right back.
We'll be right back. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
And now to be clear, my goal and the goal of many of those joining me here today is to make abortion at any stage a thing of the past.
The voice of Texas Governor Rick Perry. I'm looking at an article from 2012. It's 2 years ago now, February of 2012. GOP candidates stunned by abortion survivors. Rape, incest, quote, exceptions come forward to explain why there can be no exceptions. A heading in the article says, how Kiesling, that is my guest, Rebecca Kiesling, moved Rick Perry. Rebecca, let's first talk about this issue now of why some people are pro-life but with exceptions. I have colleagues that deeply question Mitt Romney's stance overall in terms of the depth of his conservatism based on his history in Massachusetts. But we'll leave that out as a separate question, although feel free to weigh in with your opinion if you like. But why do people make this exception? I mean, if it is a baby in the womb, if it is a life, if it is a human being, then it's a human being. Why do they make the exception, in your opinion? And then how have you been able to move people like Governor Perry to change their views?
Okay, there's a few reasons. First of all, there are some people like Sean Hannity and Bishop Paul Morton who, you know, called us demon seed and said that's not what God conceived, you know. So there's some people who their theology is off. They think that, like, Satan created us. And that we're tainting the gene pool. I've seen that sort of language too. And then there's people who, you know, really it's out of concern for a rape victim. They assume that most rape victims would want an abortion, that they need an abortion, and that they would be better off with an abortion, when that could not be further from the truth. They're four times more likely to die within the next year after the abortion as compared to giving birth. They assume that the child would be a horrible reminder of the rape when that's not at all how these women see their children. They see this child as being their child, a blessing, help them to overcome evil with good. God traded beauty for ashes. You know, the rainbow at the end of the storm, right? And then also I think politicians further make the rape exception because they think that they have to in order to get elected, and or that it's indefensible in a debate because, you know, we saw like Aiken and Murdoch kind of messed up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And several others have been tripped up. Trent Franks messed up when he said pregnancy by rape is rare last summer.
Right.
And that's unfortunate that really the pro-life movement is the one who has led them to say that, saying that, oh, it's only 1%. Don't ever diminish. You know, it is what it is. There's 32,000 a year. Just defend. Don't diminish, just defend. And so, you know, I hope to address all of those things. And one of the things I'm doing with my organization, Save the One, is to be able to, I have tips for candidates. We had a major study just completed that shows what the best messaging is on this issue. So I want to educate politicians on how to properly respond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, Rick Perry did not get chastised for this because he didn't say anything stupid. He put a face to the issue, and there was a real person involved, and the media doesn't want to go there. And so really, he was given a pass on this.
Yeah, and that's quite extraordinary, recognizing the vehemence of this and what a target he's been as well. Look, we understand the younger generation especially, not just people in general, but the younger generation especially is going to be much more moved by story and by sympathy for the victim. Often not even based on truth or accuracy, they're just going to be moved by a sense of standing with the victim or the one that's being bullied, etc. And obviously the ultimate innocent victim in our society today is the baby in the womb. But you just... Just wrote an article, it's on LifeSite News, got it in my hands. Mississippi legislators reject rape exception, but throw children with fetal anomalies under the bus. And this is Mississippi, a very conservative state in our union. They passed a bill, HB 1400, 20-week abortion ban known as the Preborn Pain Act. The vote was 89 to 22. A rape incest exception amendment was introduced but was defeated by a vote of 73 to 40. Terrific. Mm-hmm. But you're saying as you looked at the bill, you were not just excited, you were pained as well. So what's the exception now where they're saying that, that the abortions can be performed at certain points?
And the same thing happened in Texas and Georgia and Louisiana where they're attacking these children. I mean, you know, Rick Santorum's daughter, Bella, would have fit into that, saying that she had a condition that was incompatible with life. Well, oftentimes these children, like my friend Brad and Jesse Smith, who also have a child with trisomy 18, they're told that the condition is incompatible with life because they refuse to treat. These hospitals have futility policies. We had a baby with special needs. Our second adopted child, Cassie, had DiGeorge syndrome. Most of the babies who had what she had were aborted. And, you know, a number of those babies die shortly after birth, but, you know, if they get treated, they can live many years. The only reason why she died at 33 days old was because of medical malpractice, because the doctor was in a hurry, took her off oxygen when she wasn't ready to be.
All right, but let me play that.
On our way home.
Let me take the other side for a moment. In the second hour of my program and airing in different cities in America, I may talk about euthanasia bill in Belgium where they want to legalize it for children under certain circumstances. You know, as a compassionate woman, as a caring mother, as an adoptive mother, that there are some children that suffer terribly and their life is going to be very short, barring a miracle of God. They're not going to live more than a few months. Maybe it'll take hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical intervention even to keep them alive. If you can spare that child from terrible suffering, they're going to die anyway. They're not going to have any positive impact on this world. It could tear the marriage apart, the pain they go through. It taxes our medical system. In the ancient world, you wouldn't even be able to sustain this kid that long. Aren't we playing God by not making a good choice here and saying, no, that kid's just going to come into this world and suffer? That would be the argument that's presented, and it can be presented in a way that's very emotionally jarring when you see some of these little children and what they go through. I'm sure you're confronted with that all the time. How do you respond?
You know, the whole justification for these pain pills are that children can feel pain during these late-term abortions. And so it's irrelevant that they're going to feel pain during the late-term abortion. You know, my daughter, she died at 33 days old, like I said, and she had special needs, so she had tubes to breathe, tubes to feed. But let me tell you, it was an honor to take care of her, and her life has value. You know, in Isaiah, it says, does the clay say to the potter, what have you named? Do you say to a father or to a mother, what have you brought to birth? And God says, do you question me about the work of my hands? It is I who have created the earth and all mankind upon it. Could he have made himself any clearer? Jesus said that it is better to enter life maimed or crippled than to be born with two arms or two legs and to be thrown into the eternal fire. These are the least of these things that Jesus spoke of. And we're supposed to protect them. And our society has so discounted spiritual suffering, like as if there's absolutely no purpose in suffering. You know, they just call it needless suffering. You know, they don't talk about, like, how lives can be changed. Our daughter, Cassie, changed her birth mother's life. Her birth mother had two abortions. And she kept saying, but I'm pro-choice. I just feel like there's no reason why I can't have this child now. And when she saw Cassie with her special needs and that most of these babies get aborted, it broke her. And she said, Cassie has changed my life. I am so pro-life now. And she was able to finally confess her sin to God over her abortions and get healing for that.
Incredible.
You know, you think her life didn't have value? Her life didn't change people? Her life changed lots of people.
And, we had friends, they've got a bunch of kids. In fact, the wife just died recently of leukemia, tragically, after raising her family. But one of their kids, the husband had gone on a 40-day fast. He was a pastor. He was Messianic Jewish leader, actually, was earnestly seeking God. in many ways, went on a 40-day fast. After the 40-day fast, he and his wife came together again. The child they conceived had a severe genetic defect. They were told the child wouldn't live more than a year. It died somewhere around 11 months. And I remember how they looked at that child as the most extraordinary gift they had ever received. And I remember at the funeral where the mom actually said she had a certain sense of joy knowing that God's people in the heavenly kingdom were now going to experience the beauty of this little child she had. And this is a mom talking, and I remember just being stunned by what they had to say. But, you know, the question always comes down to this. Where does one draw the line? What if the child will just be handicapped in another way, or mentally retarded, or Down syndrome? Amazing thing is, most Down's kids are happy to be alive, and most of their family members are happy to have them as siblings.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is more than a song. A lot is at stake. There's little lives, so we strive not for argument's sake. Pro-life, pro-choice, there is some division, like it's anyone's decision, but these little ones are living. It's so much more than volition.
That is Christ-centric, calling us to fight for the children. My guest, Rebecca Kiesling, conceived in rape, now a pro-life activist, an attorney, and mother of five. Rebecca, I'm sure you looked at some of the surveys that were done when kids and adults with Down syndrome were asked about quality of life, and they were overwhelmingly happier than your average person. And then the siblings and the parents all were much more happy and excited to have a Down syndrome sibling or child than the other. It was just kind of amazing to see. And we've had, just in a congregation of 400 or 500, we've had two couples with Down syndrome kids. So we know the challenges. We know the obstacles they face. And the therapy and all of this and other medical conditions that they can have. Another couple, to their total surprise, after their youngest kid was in their teens, after four kids, found out they were pregnant again. And the doctor said, all right, we want to, you know, do a test, amniocentesis, and see if you've got Down syndrome. And they said, well, why? Just whether we do or not, we're having the child. What have you seen in terms of even special needs kids enriching the lives of the families? Because if you look at Down syndrome kids, it's on the top of the list of the unprotected, innocent victims in our society in the womb today.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, 90% of all Down syndrome children are aborted.
Yeah.
So they're totally targeted in our society. I have several friends who have children with Down syndrome, and they, you know, after the child was born, brought their child to church even, and had people in church look at them holding their baby and ask them, didn't you take the test? Like they're saying, what are you, stupid? Why would you want that?
In church.
Yeah.
And
that's our abortion culture, that everybody else is devaluing the church. There's no compassion at all. It's made our culture a far less compassionate people. It's horrible.
Yeah. I mean, you could just argue that abortion in general, of course, is the assault on life. One of the arguments Mother Teresa made years ago, you know, when a society where the mothers kill their own children, what's worse than that? And we see the dehumanizing of society in so many ways. I want to give you another opportunity to respond to an audio clip. This is typical mindset. It's from the Young Turks. Clip number 8, Joey.
They have banned any type of insurance that covers abortion for anything other than a case where a woman's life is in danger. So let's say you have you need to have an abortion because you got raped. Well, your insurance company will not pay for that.
I guess you're going to have the rapist child and have you and your husband raise.
It's disgusting. Forcing someone who got raped to have the baby is one of the cruelest things that you can possibly do.
And, of course, speaking of what was happening in Michigan, your response, Rebecca?
Yeah, I was part of that effort here in Michigan. and there were 10 of us who were up there doing a press conference, you know, who all were conceived in rape or mothers from rape. And, you know, they act like they're speaking out, again, on behalf of these rape victims, and this is not how the rape victims see their children. But, you know, they're asking other people to pay for their abortion. It's like it's bad enough that you think it should be legal. Now you want to drag other people into it and make other people pay for your abortion? It's, you know, they're the ones who are really extreme. And I think it's extreme to tell another living human being that they're garbage, that they don't deserve to be living, and that they're not worthy of protection. Again, we have 25 to 27,000 children born every year in the U.S., 1% of the population, who are made to feel worthless, like they're garbage, like they're demon spawn, evil seed, don't deserve to be here, horrible reminder of the rape. How unfair is that, that these innocent children are demonized like that?
Yeah.
And I'm part of a support group of people who have these stories, and there's so many people who are suffering from that wound unfairly. You know, they value their lives, but they're suffering from the pain of what people say, and you don't realize how your rhetoric not only devalues the unborn children who are left unprotected, but all the children born who have these issues, just like right. My friends who have children with Down syndrome. Now you're discriminating against them. You're devaluing the lives of these children who are born.
Yeah.
Because of your prejudices.
And you know, even this notion about, you know, the Hannity thing, the sins of the fathers, et cetera. Well, how many ungodly people are having kids? How many of us came from ungodly homes? How many came from an evil mother or an evil father? And in God's sight, when you look at the state of the human race, you realize this is happening every minute of every day, and yet every life is precious, and it's only God who can give life. And Rebecca,
there's no death penalty for rapists either. The Supreme Court said no death penalty for rapists, but it's cruel, unusual punishment even for child molesters. Only 1% of rapists ever see jail time. Yeah, and you're going to punish the child? Why don't you start talking about protecting women from the rapists instead of complaining about the child? If you really care about rape victims so much, prove it.
Yeah, well, Rebecca, listen, you have more people for you than against you, and more importantly, you have God on your side backing you as you stand for life. We've just got a minute. If folks go to your website, we've put it up on our website, on Facebook pages, but if they go to your website, what will they find there?
You'll find my story, you'll find videos, you'll find dozens of other life-affirming stories of others conceived in rape, mothers from rape, and famous people conceived in rape. My philosophical abortion essay, my adoption poetry, the letter from my birth mother. If you just Google pro-life speaker, my website's number one, or if you Google conceived in rape or pregnant by rape, it's ranked number one. So it's easy to find. You don't have to remember how to spell my name. And then there's also savetheone.com, and that's the number one. That's our other website for our activism group.
Wonderful. Well, Rebecca, thank God for what you're doing. We will constantly be referring people your way. And all of my listeners, let's be praying for Rebecca and the work she's doing. Thanks so much for being a champion for life.
Thank you so much.
All right. Boy, what a joy. What a joy to speak with Rebecca Kiesling. Again, all of the web information is on our website. Friends, we are on the radio. Here is your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. We need your help to do this. This is a joint effort. We are listener-sponsored. Stand with us. Help us with a gift of any size. If you believe in what we're doing, help with a gift of any size. And I want to send you two DVDs, the value with postage, $40, my debate with Rabbi Shmuley, Is Homosexuality America's Greatest Moral Crisis? And with gay activist Harry Knox, Can You Be Gay and Christian? Your gift of any size, but call now. This is by phone only, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. One more time, that's 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, why, oh why, do you want to punish the baby in the womb for the sins of the father? Boy, are we going to tackle some difficult, challenging, controversial moral issues right here on the Line of Fire. Let's get a kingdom perspective together.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Anna, I got a little quiz question for you. Are you ready? If you get it right, I want to send you two free DVDs, about a $40 value with postage. My debate with Rabbi Shmuley Boteach is Homosexuality, America's Greatest Moral Crisis, and my debate with gay activist Harry Knox, Can You Be Gay and Christian? A Christian Response to Homosexuality. Remember to call 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I'm going to give you that quiz in a moment, but I have to get the answer to Johnny first so he'll know when you call in if you have the right answer. So let's see if I can do this. I'm going to type and talk at the same time. There are certain things I multitask very, very well. This one I haven't totally mastered, but let's see if I can do this. Oh, yeah. Oh, this is easy. Are you kidding me? Wow. All right. You're going to call and give your guess on this. What do these people have in common? Jesse Jackson. I'll give you three to start. Jesse Jackson, whom all of you know his name. Frederick Douglass, one of the most famous former slaves, abolitionist leader, and James Robeson, TV Christian minister, respected. What do Jesse Jackson, Frederick Douglass, and James Robeson all have in common? Get this right. I'll send you these two DVDs as a gift. 866-34-TRUTH. Oh, the phone lines are not melting yet. You're thinking about it. Hey, can't hurt to just take a guess. What do they all have in common? You might say they're all American. No, it's got to be more than that. They're all human beings. That's got to be more than that. They're all male. That's got to be more than that. What unique thing do they all have in common? 866-34-TRUTH. I want to talk about a bunch of controversial, moral, social issues today in our society and in the world. The country of Belgium is getting a lot of criticism, and they're surprised at the level of criticism they're getting at their plan to legalize euthanasia for children, that a child in certain circumstances would be allowed to say to the physician or whoever the person in authority would be and say, yes, I would like to be killed. All right, we have a winner. Phone lines have been ablaze for the last few seconds, last minute and a half here. We do have a winner. We have a winner. No more calls. Thank you. We have a winner. So what was the question? The question was, what do Jesse Jackson, and then former slave and abolitionist leader Frederick Douglass, and then pastor, evangelist, TV host James Robeson, what do they all have in common? They were all conceived in rape. If you had said, well, baby conceived in rape, mother should have the right to kill that kid in the womb, not have to suffer for the rest of her life over what that rapist did. My guest, Rebecca Kiesling, I just had on the last hour, herself was conceived in rape and is a pro-life activist. This is on her website, RebeccaKiesling.com. Same with Eartha Kitt, Ethel Waters, former presidential candidate John Cox, a whole bunch of others. Wow, what a list.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to continue some of these controversial moral issue discussions today on The Line of Fire. One of the things we try to do on the broadcast is help you think through issues with clarity. 866-34-TRUTH. As I spoke with Rebecca in the last hour, I'd raise certain points and certain arguments, and people would think they're making a really good point, and I'd say, how do you respond? And boom, with crystal clarity, a reality strikes again. So congratulations to Kevin in Arlington, Texas, for getting the answer right on the website, RebeccaKiesling.com. You can also just go to SaveTheOne.com. She has a list of famous people conceived in rape. Lane Beachy, world champion surfer and author. Sherry Eldridge, adoption author, speaker, and adoption therapist. Pam Stenzel, international abstinence speaker and author. Ryan Scott Bomberger, Emmy Award winner, speaker, singer, songwriter. Julie McAma, speaker, activist, and co-authors of Victims and Victors. Kelly Wright, co-anchor of Fox's Fox and Friends Weekend. Jenny Moss, activist and speaker from Human Life International. And on and on. It goes Bill Connor, owner of Prairie Coach Trailways in Del Rapids. He started Angel Bus, a nonprofit organization that provides luxury bus rides to terminally ill children who travel to the Mayo Clinic for treatment. All right. Since we get our lines clear, I've got some questions to ask you. 866-34-TRUTH. But this is Reuters reporting a couple days ago. Belgian media expressed rank incomprehension over foreign criticism of the country's extension of euthanasia to children, portraying legislation as humane and dismissing any notion of sick children being pressed to their death. Thursday's vote, so last week, the first to extend such provisions to children without any age limit, passed as easily as 2002 legislation allowing euthanasia for adults that had backing from 75% of Belgians. It created only minor ripples of dissent in the country, but a wave of interest and fury abroad. Now, in point of fact, Belgium has one of the smallest born-again Christian populations of any nation in the world. We have students that have graduated from our ministry school. Precious students came as older couples, actually, to the school. In other words, they didn't come as teenagers. And they told us more about Belgium and about the tiny, tiny born-again Christian population there. And the Christian religion that does exist is often very, very traditional and hence is not biblically based and hence does not hold to clear biblical values on some issues having to do with life. I'm not condemning all of Belgium. I'm sure in many ways it has values that put America to shame, but in these ways it is very, very weak and very much on the wrong side. So according to the conservative German daily newspaper Die Welt, which is the world, for those that don't know German, Belgium has allowed the killing on demand of terminally ill children and has headed for the ethical abyss. A state which allows something like this is a failing state. The law covering euthanasia of minors is different to the broader euthanasia law. Adults can opt for death by injection if they find their condition intolerable and pain too great. Cases have included deaf twin brothers about to go blind. Children must also be shown to be terminally ill. The child makes the decision with parental consent in allowing euthanasia for a child of any age. Belgium will move even beyond the neighboring Netherlands, known for its liberal attitude to a range of social issues, but where a minimum age of 12 is set. The Belgian Daily De Morgen said, for the first time since 1830, we have evolved to being ethically progressive leaders. We can be quite proud of that. What do you think of that? A child, terrible pain or with terminal disease barring divine intervention, can actually ask to be euthanized. I mean, you can show pictures of a child suffering and you can show pictures of a family suffering, but the idea that a child could make that decision. Even that an adult can just say, hey, I can't take the pain anymore. I want to die. We put animals to sleep. We, you know, you got a sick dog and the dog's suffering. It's not going to get better. You put the dog to sleep. Why are we more humane in our treatment of our pets, our animals? You put down a horse with a broken leg, but a human being that is in constant pain and drugs and therapy can't help. You're just going to say to the person, well, just live on and suffer. That's the argument for euthanasia. Many of you know I'm working on a commentary in the book of Job, and these are questions that Job himself asks. For example, in the third chapter of the book of Job, listen to the question that he asks. He's not just asking, as he does earlier in the chapter, why was I ever born? Why didn't I perish at birth? Why didn't I die in the womb, or why didn't I die as soon as I came out of the womb? Then I wouldn't be suffering the way I am now. I wouldn't be experiencing the agony that I am inside and out now. Why was not hidden away in the ground like a stillborn child, like an infant who never saw the light of day? But then he says this, Job 3:20, why is light given to those in misery and life to the bitter of soul, to those who long for death that does not come, who search for it more than for hidden treasure, or who are glad when they get to the burial heap, rejoice when they reach the grave? Why? Why is light, meaning life, why is it given to those in misery? Why is life preserved? So let me ask you this. 866-34-TRUTH. Give me your best argument against this new law in Belgium that says that children can be euthanized upon request. By the way, doctors in Belgium said, well, we do this anyway. We do it in the gray zone. That's how one of them described it, when no one's looking. Doctors in Holland have said the same thing. Oh, we've euthanized thousands and thousands of infants and elderly without anyone's permission, just because we deemed that their suffering was going to be too great, or we're going to bring this child into the world and it's going to have terrible pain and it's going to need all kinds of surgeries, even just to survive a few weeks or a few months. So why even bring this child into the world? They said, oh yeah, we've euthanized thousands without anybody's permission, which is, that's not the doctor I want treating me or my family, or my kids or grandkids. But now the kid at any age can say, I don't want to live anymore. I don't want to live anymore. Maybe you were one that suffered terribly growing up, and now you look back at it and you are glad that you're alive. Maybe you're parents and you have or had a severely handicapped child. Now, let me be plain. I believe that God is a healer, and because I believe God is a healer, therefore I am on the side of medical science and medical care. In other words, because God is a healer and because God is a giver of life, I believe that we are working with him when we're trying to relieve suffering and relieve pain, as opposed to working against him. If I believe that it was God's will to make people sick and diseased, and that's what he went about doing, then hospitals and doctors and nurses and medical care would all be in rebellion against his purposes, as F.F. Bosworth pointed out many years ago, F.F. Bosworth being the Pentecostal leader who played a great role in helping to mentor A.W. Tozer. But give me your best argument as to why this law is misguided and wrongheaded, or if you agree with it, give me your best argument for it. If you agree that if there is a child that you can tell, okay, this child is going to be born with Down syndrome and this child is going to be born with a severe genetic defect, then should the parents have the right to terminate that pregnancy rather than just bring a handicapped child into the world? So maybe in your own experience you've been through this. Maybe as a parent you've been through this. I'd love to hear from you. Maybe you're someone that has suffered from terminal illness and it's even a challenge to pick up the phone and make a call, and you'd like to weigh in. I'll hear from all sides today, but understand, of course, that I do not believe that it's up to us to decide when a life is worth living or not worth living, or when someone is too handicapped to make any contribution to this world. And in light of that, the person himself or herself does not have the right to say, okay, I can't take it anymore. I'm going to have my life end it. Listen, I understand the compassionate arguments that can be given. And I know that some, your families have suffered terribly. And it's all you've done to keep your marriage and family together as a result of severe sickness in one of your family members. We'll talk about this delicately. Some other international issues I want to talk about as well because they impact America too. 866-34-TRUTH. Your turn to weigh in when we come back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. It's Wednesday, focusing on the world, on moral and cultural issues, having a discussion about some controversial laws. I'm going to go to your calls in one moment. My colleague Jennifer LeClaire, who's the editor at Charisma News, where I publish a few articles a week in the opinion column, she notes that as Belgium made international headlines last week for extending euthanasia to children, apparently killing terminally ill children on demand isn't quite edgy enough for the Right to Die camp. She says now, a decade after legalizing euthanasia, the Netherlands is debating doctor-assisted suicide for depression. Launched in 2012, the life-ending clinic targets people whose family doctors flat-out refuse to help them end their lives. You go to the life-ending clinic, and hey, they're now saying if you are suffering from depression, you want to end your life, we want to help you do so. 866-34-TRUTH. To the phones, Ben in... All right, we won't go there. Let's go to Don in Tampa, Florida. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, Dr. Brown. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I met you in Wesley Chapel a couple years ago. Just wanted to tell you that my daughter is born with a congenital heart defect. It's called she's had the Glenn and the Fontan to reopen her surgeries. And they told us she was going to be DeGeorge. Actually suggested we go have an abortion in Kentucky because of her quality of life. And now, I mean, there's not a single thing wrong with her. She gets a yearly or twice a year checkup on the heart. As a matter of fact, Dr. Brown, they had to do cath to go in and check, and we had x-rays that showed where they had to cauterize the coiling in her lungs. And through prayer, they went in and said there was nothing there. The x-rays were there, but then when they went in through prayer, there was nothing there. It was gone.
Mm. How old is she now, Don?
She is 6 going on 7, and she's just as bright as can be. She's in the top percentage of her growth. There's not, I mean, if you looked at her, you would never know she's had 3 open heart surgeries.
Wow.
She is my testimony.
Now, Don, when you and your wife were told she's going to have a congenital heart defect and they gave you the worst-case scenario, how did that affect you two emotionally?
My wife broke down, and I went to the only place I could go, and that was to my knees in prayer. And I remember I heard a whisper in my ear, and it sounded like my daughter's voice, and it told me to tell my wife. It said, Daddy, tell Mommy God's not through with me yet.
Hmm. Wow.
Yes, sir.
And in your mind, obviously, God's worked miraculously on behalf of your daughter, and there is that reminder, one, God can intervene. Two, the doctors, all of our medical science, don't always get things right, or some things change inexplicably. But do you think, I know this is a strange question because God's helped you miraculously and you have this testimony, but do you think you would be talking the same way in terms of glad you had your daughter and thankful for her coming into your life if she was enjoying a very low quality of life right now?
Yes, sir, because I could not imagine life without her. God has given her a gift. She's a gift to us. And as a matter of fact, we named her Kaylee Sarah, Sarah meaning God's princess. And regardless of the quality of life, I mean, I don't know how to put it in words, to just say that I thank God for anything and everything because it's His will.
Yes. Well, Don, thank you for the call.
Yes,
you can,
sir.
You can speak a lot more loudly than many of us can, which is why I've asked for folks to call who can speak from personal experience. Thank you, sir. Let's go to Arlington, Texas. Juana, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I listen to you as often as I can.
Well, thank you.
I wanted to call in with a testimony. I have a granddaughter named Grace, and she is 12 years old. She is in regular public school, and she does well. She's an AB student. When she was born 12 years ago, she had every organ of her body was malformed. Her brain, she only had half, and they told us that she wasn't going to live but a few minutes. And we began prayer, and she did live. She had no skin. She had three holes in her heart. They said she was, she only has one eye. They said she was blind and deaf, should never have hair, never have teeth, after being in the hospital for about 3 months, and she did live. But they said, you know, she'll be a total vegetable. But as we prayed, went to the chapel and prayed for specific organs, we saw God heal her, because she now can see and she can hear. She has long, wavy brown hair. She's just as smart as any other 12-year-old. She does have to be fed through a tube only because she never learned to eat. Although she does eat, it's not enough to sustain her. But she is a major blessing. People that meet her just are overwhelmed by her sweetness, her sweet spirit. And, you know, we know that God has a special plan for her because they told us she's a total vegetable. She'll never, ever hear, see, talk, move, or anything if she lives.
Extraordinary.
And so, you know, we're just in awe of her every day.
And real quick, Juana, I hate to make this short, but just with the time we have, when her parents were informed of her condition, at what stage was that?
That was when she was born, when she was full term. My daughter-in-law kept telling the doctors, there's something wrong. I know there's something wrong with my baby. And they just said, you're just a nervous mom. That's the only problem here.
So if they had told her your baby's going to be a vegetable before she had given birth, months earlier when she could have had an abortion, would she have?
No. No, she was actually having a miscarriage, and she and my son got down on their knees and said, God, we want this baby. No matter what, we want this child.
So her
bleeding stopped, her contraction stopped, and she carried it full term.
Wow. So she knew something was wrong, but that did not matter. That's her baby. I mean, friends, and I'm sitting here with tears listening to this. These are human beings we're talking about. We're not saying you're more human if you can run fast. You're more human only if you function perfectly in every way. You're more human only if you're beautiful. No, we're talking about human beings created in the image of God. And all the more do we need to be reminded of this when people who are suffering or enjoying a low quality of life say, I want to make an end to it. I want to terminate my life. We are now playing God as we do that. Juana, thank you for that beautiful testimony about your beautiful granddaughter. Beauty comes in many, many different ways, inward as well as outward, and the inward is the more important. Friends, if you value what we're doing on the radio, if you're glad that I'm on the air, if you thank God for us and pray for us, stand with us today. Your gift of any size, I want to send you two very special DVDs with postage. The value is $40, but I want to send you two very special DVDs, one where I debated gay activist Harry Knox, who claims to be a born-again Christian, on a Christian response to homosexuality. I mean, you'll find this tremendously eye-opening. And then my friend Rabbi Shmuley, is a homosexuality America's greatest moral crisis. The two DVDs will send you as my thank you gift for your support. So would you call now? This is by phone only, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. Oh, you will be enriched. You'll be enriched by the DVDs, but you'll help us as well. 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, a quick reminder, all of my friends in the greater Charlotte area, tomorrow night, don't miss it, Southern Evangelical Seminary. The details are available if you go to ses.edu or my website, askdrbrown.org. I'll be having a dialogue with Professor James Tabor. He heads up the religion department at University of North Carolina at Charlotte, so UNC Charlotte. He is a well-known author and scholar in his field. We'll be discussing his book, Paul and Jesus, where he has some very radical views about the New Testament as we have it and our beliefs as we have them today. He says it's not the real Jesus movement that Peter, James, Jacob would have followed, but rather the one that Paul created. So we're going to have a friendly dialogue about this. It's $10 admission for the event. But if you are a student, if you're a college or a seminary student, Bible school student, so just an official ministry school or college with proper ID, you can get in for free if you can't afford the $10. 866-34-TRUTH. I have been asked by a gay activist for an official statement on Uganda's law criminalizing homosexual behavior. It's also criminalized certain lewd dress and pornography. It's wide-ranging, and at a certain point I will release a statement on that. I've also been asked at different times for my reaction to laws that have passed in Nigeria or Russia. And I do want to read something shortly about Russia that I think is very, very interesting. But let me just say this, and then we're going to go back to the phones. America has absolutely no moral right when it comes to sexual issues, when it comes to marriage and family issues. America has no moral right to be criticized in Uganda or Russia or India with its reinforcing of law against same-sex, quote, marriage, or Nigeria. We have no moral right, given the state of our marriages with so many divorces and no-fault divorce being the law of the land, basically, given our history of abortion, given our history of teen drug use, of kids born out of wedlock, and on and on, and given the negative fruit of homosexual activism in our country and seeing where it's gotten us today, we have absolutely no moral right to look to these other nations and say to them, what in the world are you doing, or who do you think you are, and we're going to put pressure on you. Uganda has said, hey, we'd rather not have your aid, but we're going to do what we feel is right. Let me just see if I can very quickly from Don Fetter. Sochi and the left's human rights hypocrisy. This is published February 10th, grasstopsusa.com. He said there should be an event at the Sochi Olympics where advocates posing as journalists, celebrity nitwits, and politicians can compete to see who can wail the loudest and longest about the supposed horror of Russia's dreaded anti-gay law while Pussy Riot plays in the background. Extra points will be awarded for absurd and offensive analogies to the Holocaust. He mentions congressmen in America standing against it. He mentions British newspaper The Guardian cited more than 200 prominent international authors who are lamenting the Russian law. And he points out, he said, I thought when the duly elected representatives of the people passed a law by a vote of 436-0 with one abstention, that was democracy in action. But apparently it's only democratic if Rushdie and his prominent international friends approve of the results, Speaker Salman Rushdie. And he points out how all of the comparisons to the Holocaust are downright insulting to the Holocaust. On and on it goes, but it's interesting that we now sit in moral judgment on Russia as Russia says, hey, we don't want gay propaganda for kids.
Fire we want, for fire we please. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. We are discussing Belgium's new law passed last week saying that children that want to be euthanized can be euthanized. Terminally ill children, they can request to be put to death. I mean, it's. I don't know what's more terrifying, that the law passed or that doctors said, well, we've been doing this anyway for years. 866-34-TRUTH. If you yourself have suffered illness, handicap through life, and you want to weigh in about the preciousness of life, even in the midst of pain and suffering, if you are the parents of a child that may be deceased now or that's with you now, that has been a special needs child, and you want to weigh in on either side of this debate, I'd love to hear from you. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Portland, Oregon. Pam, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, Michael. It's always wonderful to listen to you.
Well, thank you.
I see this Belgian law as a veiled form of eugenics. And it's interesting because this story came out around the same time I heard about a story of a giraffe, a healthy giraffe, a baby giraffe, that was euthanized in Denmark because it was considered disposable DNA. There were other zoos that were willing to take this animal, but the director of the zoo in Denmark didn't want to send an animal to these other zoos. He said that this baby giraffe was disposable DNA, and the giraffe was killed, and its body was fed to the lions, and a public necropsy was done on this giraffe, in which children and adults and people were witnessing the cutting of this dead animal. And it shocked me, but yet it wasn't strange to hear that story and to link it to euthanizing terminally ill children. Because
what's so ironic and tragic is that people who probably spoke out against what was done to the giraffe would say, hey, it's you know, it wasn't the giraffe's choice, and it's a poor victim, and maybe even be morally outraged over it, but they'd be fine with doctors euthanizing children or adults that they deem to be in terrible suffering, and now they're going to help ease them out of their suffering. And as well as that, be in favor of these laws as they've been passed in Belgium and Netherlands. Yeah, Pam, it reminds me of someone from Greenpeace many years ago knocked on the door of a friend's house and said, we're collecting money to save the baby whales. And my friend said, well, I'm interested in saving the baby humans. And they were outraged with him and took off in a huff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'll have those double standards, and the folly of it is mind-boggling. And then, is there a world to come? Well, what about the world to come? What if it's important to preserve life and for someone to be right with God for the world to come? Oh, do we factor that in? 866-34-TRUTH. Speaking of eugenics, Steve Forbes wrote an opinion piece last month, we are on the malignantly slippery slope to becoming a society like that envisioned by Nazi Germany, one in which undesirables are disposed of like used tissues. Remember, it wasn't the Jews and the gypsies that were rounded up first. It was others that were the social misfits because of age or handicap. Those were some of the first to go. 866-34-TRUTH. Lori in Greensboro, North Carolina, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I wanted to call in because I heard what you were talking about, euthanization. And it struck a nerve with me because my first cousin was born, I think, at least 5 weeks premature. I'm not exactly sure how many weeks it was, but I can tell you I remember her fitting in the palm of your hand. She
wow.
was about 2 ounces, and the doctors told my aunt, you know, she's going to be mentally retarded. You know, she's not going to ever gain the weight that she's supposed to gain like normal children, and her life expectancy is not going to be that of a normal child or a normal adult. And at that time, my aunt was faced with, you know, do I believe what they say, or do I believe the God that I've always known? And I'm so glad that in the face of the doctor's knowledge, my aunt and uncle stood and believed God, because my cousin Jennifer not only graduated from a four-year college, North Carolina A&T, but she also received her master's, and she's now working. And she's not underweight. She's nowhere near mentally retarded. As a matter of fact, she was an honor student all through school.
Mm.
And I'm just so thankful that, you know, they had that courage, but I want people to have that same courage and belief in God and knowing that all things are possible with Him.
Yeah, and you know, we've had, thank you, Lori, for sharing that, but this is what the third testimony now of someone calling in, either as a parent or grandparent now here, speaking of a cousin. In each case, what the doctor said was grave, and these children have grown up healthy and strong, may have certain handicaps, but they're growing up healthy and strong, and everyone is thrilled that they're in this world. And obviously, the children themselves are glad to be in this world. How many people, if you've been through a certain hell now, you look back at it, if you could have pushed the button, you would have. If you could have pushed the button, so to say, or gotten the doctor to push the button, using that euphemistically, and you could have ended your life, you might have done it. You're thrilled you didn't. But in the depth of despair, in the depth of terrible physical pain and suffering or hopeless words spoken to you, you would have. And again, the question then becomes, where does one draw the line and who's capable of making the decision? And on it goes. And ultimately, you open up the door to all types of tragedy. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Dave in Flower Mounds, Texas. Thank you, sir, for calling the Line of Fire.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I wanted to share my testimony. My little brother, Christopher, has been handicapped his whole life. In fact, what this whole euthanasia has been affecting me, my parents had the opportunity when he was born to basically pull the plug. He was born as a stillbirth, and the doctor basically came to my father and said, "Do you want to pursue? Do you want us to pursue his life, or do you want to just let him go?" And of course, my father said, "Do whatever you can." Christopher ended up being born with, he was born dead, but he was he has a hearing loss now, cerebral palsy, brain damage, and another emotional issues as well. But through his life, he has rewarded so many that have come in contact with him. He's been a blessing to his church. He gathers offerings on Sundays. He lived a wonderful life, and he's given my family the support that it needs to continue on. And as an expecting father myself, I'm forced to consider what I would do in that situation. And because of his life, I know that no matter what, I would never make the choice to end a life.
Mm.
If God has sent it here on earth.
And Dave, how old is your brother now?
He's currently 24 years old. I'm 27.
And your parents, who had all the hardship and trauma of this, have they ever questioned the decision they made?
They've never questioned the decision because they've seen the blessings that he's brought to our family. Of course, as he's gotten older and he's gotten more emotionally aware of his situation, it's been a struggle. He's gone through schizophrenia. He's gone through terrible emotional problems. But those struggles have all seemed to be driven away with the power of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, when people turn to God for his help in the midst of this, all things are possible. Dave, thanks for sharing that. Again, Dave can say things that I can't say. His family can say things that I can't say. And I do understand that we have medical means today to sometimes just preserve life when it isn't life. But you're talking about an option where extraordinary means were taken to preserve a life. And here's a brother saying it's a valuable life and a life that enhances many others. And who knows what God will do with this young man in the days to come. Hey, Dave, thank you so much for calling in. You know, and I'm just reminded again, we're in a society now where you have designer babies and gender selective abortions. Nah, we didn't want a boy. Nah, we didn't want a girl. We're remembering, we're being reminded today that life is a whole lot more valuable than our throwaway society.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, look at these stats. This is an article on NBCnews.com. I don't have the date of it. South Korea, suicides among the elderly have risen more than fivefold, from 14 per 100,000 in 1990 to 77 per 100,000 in 2009. In Taiwan, seniors took their lives more than twice as often as any other age group, a rate of 35.8 per 100,000 in 2010 versus 17.6 per 100,000 for the national average. And then suicide among city dwellers in China, aged 77 to 74, surged to 33.76 out of 100 per 100,000 in the mid-2000s, up from 13.39 per 100,000 in the 1990s. One explanation is the reduced rate of children being born. And now you have people getting older without the normal support of life that there would be from having other children and family with whom you'd live or whom would care for you. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Danielle in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, you're welcome. I just wanted to give a testimony about my brother, who was in a motorcycle accident at 33. He was an unsaved gentleman. I was a saved young woman at the time, and he should not have lived. We were all the family in the hospital, and the doctors came out and said there was nothing else they could do, and they wanted his organs, et cetera, which was feasible for us if that was the case, but I asked if we could have 24 hours. And during that time, I prayed and I said, you know, Lord God, if your word is true, you say in your Bible that not you will have none to perish, but all to have eternal life. And if that is true, he will need physical life at this time in order for him to accept Christ as his Savior. And God answered my prayer. I moved a mountain with my faith of a mustard seed. And within the next few days, he began to breathe on his own and move. And now he never got beyond the place that he could walk or talk. He had to wear diapers. It was a very difficult situation. But I became his legal guardian, and I took care of him. And my father gave him physical therapy every day. And the whole family, we visited him twice a day. And I shared the Word of God every day, and we read our Bible. He did receive Christ as his Savior. So that's the difference. Had we let him go, because it would have been easier, he would be without the Lord Jesus, and he is currently with the Lord Jesus. He suffered for 15 years, but I'll bet he stood in front of his Savior and said it was worth it all. I was able to witness to not obviously only him, but other people in the nursing home. And so lots of elderly people and visitors, they also accepted Christ as their Savior. So it became my mission field for 15 years, and it was just totally of the Lord. It was totally of the Lord. I would never have visited that nursing home every week the time. And you know, the hospitals,
Danielle,
without that accident.
It's an extraordinary testimony of what real love is. And he's your brother just as much in that condition as he was when he was running around and playing with you as a kid, and just
Absolutely.
As much your parents' son. It is overwhelming. These things are tragedies. We don't understand why they happen, but we know that, God's a redeemer. And whatever the cause, whatever the reason for the tragedy, God can turn it around for greater good. What a testimony of love, compassion, and of the value of human life and living in light of eternity. Linda in Greensboro, North Carolina, thanks for calling the Line of Fire. I know you have an important story. Our time's a little short, so please go for it.
Yes, my name is Linda, and I had a daughter in 1993. She was born with endocardia cushion defect. Her left aorta was deformed, and she had a hole in her heart. But prior to that, I was in the hospital for about 4 months prior to her birth, and my doctor and my husband came in and sat down beside the bed and asked me if I would please have an abortion, because the chances of my dying was great. I had placenta previa and hemorrhaged off and on for 4 months. And I asked, the doctor came in with a book and sharing with me that he thought she would have Down syndrome and that she would be born with this heart defect and she'd have to have open heart surgery immediately and probably wouldn't make it anyway. And could I just consider having an abortion? So I told my husband, you know, he said, you have got 3 children at home to consider. And I told him that the child that I'm carrying needed me worse right at that particular time. So needless to say, she was born. She did not have Down syndrome. She did have the heart defect. At 22 months, she had to have open heart surgery, and then again at 6 years. After that, she was in her sixth grade. She was at Carolina Beach in North Carolina, and a lionfish in the ocean stung her. She fell in the water, and a lionfish stung her. She had a blood clot that went up her backbone and into her brain. She had a stroke, a massive stroke. They airlifted her to Chapel Hill. She stayed in the hospital there. They came in and said, you know, that she would not live through the night, and that it was a massive stroke. And we all rallied around and prayed, and God had mercy on her. And today she graduated Eastern Guilford High School 2 years ago, and today she is walking and talking and very intelligent, and it just blesses my heart, God's faithfulness.
Wow. You know, Linda, I can't even comment on something that sacred, but for everyone listening, here's the doctor and the husband saying, have the abortion, and the appeal to the other 3 kids that need the mom. And Linda, as a mom, boy, what a contrast to our abortion-crazed society. As a mom, says, this baby in the womb needs me more. You know, our phone lines have been lit up since I raised this subject. So many of you with stories to tell. We'll talk about this again, because your stories are ministering to many. Linda, thank you. Thank you for your testimony and for your faithfulness to God and for your love for your daughter. Love to meet her one day. I don't know how many other programs get to talk about issues like this on Christian radio. I'm so pleased we have the opportunity, but it's all with your help. Would you stand with us today? Help us with your gift of any size, and I want to send you 2 very special DVDs, my debate with Rabbi Shmuley Boteach and my debate with gay activist Harry Knox about homosexuality. You'll find these to be very, very important, eye-opening. $40 retail value with postage, but yours for your gift of any size. So pick up the phone now. Give us a call, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, as I literally wipe the tears away from my eyes, who can put a value on the life of a child, healthy or sick? Who can put a value on the life of a little one?